ask
Maybe
you.
quicker.
Okay, yeah. I'm sorry, we're getting the sound set here. We looking good?
Let's check your levels, my man.
Okay. All right, testing. One, two, testing.
A little on the loud side.
Testing.
The
You mean to
video.
talk or anything?
Oh, no, you're good. We're trying to get my levels. You're looking good on your end. So once we get me EQ'd out, we'll be ready to go.
Okay, let's get a little something from him.
Okay, can we get a little from you, Jason?
Yes, hello, hello. Here I am, hello. Checking the level. Hello, hello, hello. Checking the level.
All right, we're looking good, Jason.
Okay, cool.
Okay.
Where are you calling from?
Actually, I'm in a burb of Kansas City, Missouri. It's Belton, but we're actually technically in Kansas City, Missouri.
Oh, cool. I spent all my summers in Joplin, Missouri, the poor city that was just taken out.
Wow, what were you doing over there?
That's where my mom's from, man. I was there, like, my grandparents were there, so from about, I think the first flight I took, just me and my sister on our own, I was about five, six.
Wow.
We were like those little kids that they would let sit in the cockpit the whole time.
Yeah.
It was incredible, but yeah, like going out to Joplin like every summer for about 6 or 7 years.
Wow. I'll tell you what, in response to that tornado, Kansas City has been given all kinds of money and time. I mean, it's been amazing the outpouring from this area to help those
Oh,
guys
cool.
out. Yeah. So I also moonlight as an artist, so I know a lot of artists in town have taken debris from the area, made pieces out of it, put shows together, and raised like 40 grand for these guys.
Oh, great, great.
Yeah.
So are they going to rebuild that little town?
Yeah, they're in the process right now. Funny enough, there's a kid that I have a 13-year-old son. We carpooled soccer, and he said the first business that was back up and running was Walmart. So they got the Walmart back up and going, and they're rebuilding.
Okay, good.
Yeah, so
Well,
it's
yeah,
awesome.
I just have fond memories of that place because I also had my grandparents got me a little Honda 50, you know, so I was like, 9 years old, whipping around well, my grandpa had 80 acres of farmland. He was a cattle. He raised cattle,
Oh, cool.
and so he had farmland over by this little crazy little candy shop called the Candy Store, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of legendary over there, but it's, oh man, that was such a fun time.
Oh, yeah, childhood. It's full of neon colors.
Exactly.
So let me go ahead and start off here with the interview. First of all, how did you discover the man Daniel Johnston?
I had Hi, How Are You a long time ago. Like a lot of my friends, I forget who turned me on to him, but it was a friend, and I kind of had I didn't have an immediate like revelation about him. I really liked the sound of that cassette recording, and I just really liked the kind of the sound of it more than the performances at first, and then and then I just kind of I got more into that. But before starting working with him, I wasn't I certainly was by no means an aficionado on Daniel Johnston or even like a massive fan. I mean, I really liked what I had heard, and I ended up just loving that early stuff that I had known about for a decade or so, but hadn't really totally devoured until I kind of started really devouring that stuff like maybe just like 3 or 4 years ago.
Sure. What is it specifically about his style that struck you as a talent that he is?
It's kind of there's this real simple there's this I don't know how to describe it, but it's just kind of this thing that kind of makes me look at whoever's sitting next to me when some of his lyrics go by and just go, what the hell? How does he come up with that after what just happened lyrically? And especially when you meet him, it's like, where, how is there, he's clearly not, sort of is out of it as people think. His mind is very vibrant, and it's things have changed over the years a little bit, but he does come off like somebody who isn't capable of being sort of there enough to write some of the lyrics that he does. I think his lyrics are wonderful.
So how did you work out the deal to produce the 09 album, Is and Always Was?
That actually came from his manager and Dan's brother, Dick. And they just, you know, Tom just asked me, he was just, I mean, I've known Tom for, not well at all, but Tom has, you know, wanted to work with me a long time ago and kind of manage me and 6-7 years ago. And so he just called me out of the blue. I hadn't talked to him in probably a couple of years, and he said, "Hey, I have this wacky idea, and I've run it by Dick, and he's totally into the idea. And that is you basically doing your one man band thing that you do on your solo records to Daniel Johnston." And I was like, "Are you out of your mind?" You know, I'm like, "That's cool, but I don't know. First of all, how he, you know, is he aware of me? And I don't know how his fans would react to that kind of really heavy-handed person involved with Daniel's stuff. It's usually more of a collective of people. And, I thought about it for like an hour or two and then called him back and I was like, I would be completely into it. It's just all about if Daniel and I have chemistry and get along and all that stuff. So we checked that out. They flew out a month later and just to see if we would get along. And because Tom had warned me that, you know, everything could be a go, and then Daniel just might get irked by something. And it wouldn't even be anything that I did, but it would be something that he perceived. So luckily, I didn't irk him. we went ahead as planned.
So along those same lines, what was it like to work with him on the album?
It was really diverse. I mean, you know, that first time that they came out here when he and I first met, we took advantage of liking me and us getting along to go ahead and record the demos that Daniel had. He had about, I don't know, he has hundreds of songs at any given point. So we basically just did as many songs as we could in 2 days. So that was the first time I ever met him. We had lunch. And then we went back to my studio, and I just recorded him on his acoustic guitar and singing at the same time. And he just kind of bulldozed through, I don't know, I think I recorded about 25 or 30 different songs, and some of them more complete than others. Some of them were just really skeletal ideas, and they would kind of fall apart, and others were more fully formed. And, so that was a great time. Dick, his brother, and Tom, his manager, were both kind of looking at me with grins on their faces because they were like, "You're getting the Daniel you're getting the good mood, Daniel. Like, this is amazing. He obviously likes you. He's comfortable here, because you'd know it if he wasn't." And I was like, "Oh, that sounds kind of terrifying, but I'll take it." And so we recorded for those 2 days, and then he went off back to Texas. And the thing that maybe some people don't know about this record is that I made it here kind of by myself. Right. I made it in my studio in L.A. And then Daniel came back to sing it about two and a half months later. So I spent like 2 months making that record pretty much by myself. Wow. I had a friend play drums on, I think, 5 songs, and that's about it. So then he came back a couple months later, and he's a little bit different. I think I remember him walking down the driveway up to my little guest house thing, and he was like, "Hey, man," and he's like, "So we're going to, I got a bunch of new songs to record." And I'm like, "We're going to keep working on the ones that you recorded here last time." And he was like, "What?" And Dick was like, "You know, Daniel, I told you we're coming here to you're going to sing now, because Jason's kind of made this album like of your songs, and now it's time to like just sing them, because the other singing you did a couple months ago is just a rough thing." So kind of took him a while to get his head around that, and I also played him some things. And you know, before I was very concerned before playing, you know, kind of making an album for somebody. I've never really made a record like that when they're not really there. And before doing that, I made sure to talk to him about like what he wanted and what kind of, if he had any you know, parameters or things he didn't want to do on the record or, musically. And he was like, I was like, I know you like, obviously everybody knows you like the Beatles and all that stuff. And, but what about like, ELO and all this kind of, kind of 70s, more like, and some space rock stuff like Van de Graaff Generator and all that stuff. And he was like, yeah. He's like, I think the quote was something like, he's like, everybody thinks that I just make these kind of crappy records, but I want to make like a big record, with no like limitations and all this stuff. And
sure.
So I was like, perfect. Cause I'm not going to go crazy and presume that your fans are going to like something that's too bombast. But I also think that, hearing you in the context of like a kind of an experimental rock band, more than just like a crack, kind of an indie thing where the playing is questionable and all that stuff. It was like, let's just kind of get out of that for at least this album and just see what happens. And I couldn't be happier with how he sounds in that context. And apparently neither can he, because every time I see him, he's like, it's my favorite record. So
it's a beautiful album.
But what's that?
It's a beautiful album. It really is.
Oh, thank you so much.
So
yeah, the second time when he came back to sing, that was when I kind of saw the frustrated Dan, because I think he, like I said, he was prepared to record a bunch of new songs. He didn't really know that there was like an album being made. I guess it never really registered with him, even though we talked about it at length.
Right.
So, that was kind of like, oh, like I played him the first song, which is Mind Movies, which is actually the first song on the record. And he was like, what's that? And I was like, because I had all these fantasies of when I was making it, like, oh, Dan's going to come back, and now we know each other. And
for a great piece, and that was one of the motivators. I was very inspired by the fact that a piece like that moved this kid so much, and it was pretty cool.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
that's so cool.
I'll have to tell Daniel about that. But we are back on the board now. So what I want to do is I want to ask you this. On the iTunes review of the album, it said Jason Faulkner taps into the past experience as a Paul McCartney sideman to apply a wide array of 60s to 70s influenced sonic textures. What does that mean?
I have no idea. I played on one Paul McCartney record. I think that some people mistake me for the guy that plays in his band because we both have shaggy blonde hair. But I was on one Paul McCartney record, which was the thrill of my life. But I'm certainly not a Paul McCartney sideman. Having nothing to do, I would have made this record exactly the same way, having nothing to do with Paul McCartney. I guess people needed some sort of angle to write about you. I don't know what that means.
So
I'm into so many different things. I was a classical kid, so I have a deep well to draw from musically, because I kind of know, at least instrumentally, I kind of know more than I should because of the classical music.
Sure.
That as a foundation for any musician is just invaluable. I mean, there's no other experience that can sort of train your mind to be able to not only hear and appreciate things, but know exactly how to do them once you've heard them once.
Sure.
And I luckily had that. I have that kind of training, and I just had that kind of mind anyway. So, and my record collection is as diverse as it could possibly get. I mean, it's Bartok and the Buzzcocks, and even way further out than both of those things. And so I just, when I'm constructing a song and producing a song, I just kind of follow my instincts, and my instincts luckily have this big pool to draw from. And I just kind of, I'm trying to make something sound kind of original at the same time, which is, in this day and age is getting more and more difficult since so much ground has been covered historically.
Well, what the Beatles said, whatever has been done before. But I tell you what, you're the most original, as far as I'm concerned, out there as a musician putting music out there. It's amazing stuff.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
I've noticed that you've done some live gigs with Daniel. How is it to perform with him live?
Oh, those were both amazing. The first one I did was last summer, not this most recent summer, the one last year, and that was in Austin, and that was just so cool. I played, well, again, you know, like I didn't know really which Daniel I was going to get, and I got, you know, he was just in such good spirits and just so gentle, and I actually had never seen him live, so... Mm. You know, that had a bunch of, you know, brilliant things in, as far as my experience there for, you know, playing with him, doing my own set, but then also joining him on stage for, I think I did like 4 or 5 songs with him and his band, and then just watching his show. It was all just wonderful. And then, yeah, just a month or a month and a half ago, we did a show out here together in L.A., and also great, you know, I joined him on stage, and he's awesome, you know, he's an inspiration for sure.
Absolutely. Do you have any plans on collaborating on any more work with him?
Well, the couple of times I've seen him since the record, he's like, let's do another one. And I'm like, yeah, I would love to. So, you know, his brother did ask me if I could, work on something. They're going to be, I think they're putting out. I forget exactly what it is. I think they're either animating some of his comic book stuff, or he's making a comic. I can't remember exactly what it is, but it was going to have a musical companion.
Oh, cool!
And it just was bad timing. They were trying to get me to do that with him when he was here for that show we just did, and I hardly had time to do the show. I was in the middle of another project, and so I couldn't do that, and I don't know if they found somebody else to do that, but that was something they asked me to do, and I unfortunately couldn't do. So we'll see. I mean, I would do another record with him for sure.
Cool. So is Daniel a big fan of your music?
I think he is. You know, I don't know. I definitely asked his manager when he first contacted me about doing it. I was like, does Daniel know who I am and all that? And it was kind of like, he does, and he's really, he can't believe that you play with Paul McCartney and all this. It was kind of went to that, you know, because... because of Daniel's Beatle mania.
Sure.
But at this point, I would imagine, you know, I played him something when he was here, and he totally paid attention and was just like, that's real good, man. I mean, he was like really like sincere and kind of mellow and like really like took it in. And so I would imagine at this point he's taking the time to listen to what I've done.
Excellent. So... what is it about the current popular music landscape that would not allow someone like Daniel to get the airplay he deserves?
Oh, man. You know, you realize that I don't get the airplay I deserve either, so I can't.
Precisely. That's another part of this. You as well.
I have a lot of ideas. I should stop saying I have no idea, because that's not true. I have a lot of ideas. But, you know, I just think that, you know, we're not in a society where people are interested in things that are under the surface, and you know, people don't have a lot of time. That's a given. People don't have a lot of time and a lot of energy because they're so bombarded with other options, you know, with all these, with all the information that's just in your hand now via your phone. It's hard to get somebody to stop what they're doing, which is constantly like looking around for what's next, and actually sit down and pay attention to something, you know, for more than a few minutes. So, you know, I think that's kind of killed, like, the whole concept of an album, because albums are an event. It's like a movie. You sit down, or, you know, at some point you sit down and listen to an album.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I always did, and I still do. And I like to listen to them in headphones. I like to listen to them in my studio. I like to listen to them in my vintage hi-fi stuff in my bedroom, and, you know, all different ways, like sit down and listen to music. But I just think that you know, we're so immersed in you know, watching people behave really badly on TV, and that's like entertainment now. It's just like humiliation and pity and things to make you feel better about yourself, as opposed to enlightening you.
Well said.
I think that's one of the big problems. So I think Daniel's music for sure is challenging. I mean, you know, he's challenging. He's certainly an unlikely kind of lead singer type, for for somebody who's not open to diversity. But, you know, that's another reason why he's so loved. So, you know, it works as an advantage and a disadvantage for him. So, I don't know. That's a it's tough. That question actually, you know, I'm not even joking. That question keeps me up at night.
Yeah.
I'm like, what is wrong with people? you know, why don't you want to, you know, I was educated by the music that I liked as a kid. Like, it was an education. It was also entertainment, of course. I didn't like anything unless I liked it. So that had to be entertaining to begin with. But I was also, like, and I relished the education. You know, it's just amazing to think that pop music in its pure form started out. Sure, it was designed to shake your ass, but it also the Beatles were educating us. You know, so were the Stones, so was the Who, so were the Kinks for sure, and all, you know, all these kind of bands. And then what's crazy to remember is how far-reaching music got in the late 60s and early 70s, you know, with, like, some of the good prog stuff, and not even prog necessarily, but more experimental music. That's just amazing to me that those people were, you know, playing in front of 10,000 people every night, and they were, like, doing these 15-minute... I mean, that just doesn't exist now.
No.
That'll never exist again. That, you know, that kind of open-armed... celebration of really expanding your mind and your what you know. So people aren't interested in that anymore.
No.
Certainly people in the underground are, but not popular. So I just think that everybody should just stop trying to be popular and not worry about it, because I certainly gave up on that a long time ago.
Yeah. Amen. Amen. Yeah. There was a good friend of mine years ago. They were in it was one of the bigger KC bands that was around, called the Daybirds, and his name was Phil Schlatter, and he used to sit down with the LO albums and beg us to stay in the room. And it was like you said, it was theater. It was just, I mean, I don't see that anymore, even with my kids. They don't sit around and listen to albums anymore, which is really a lost art.
Yeah, that really is. And I make sure, I mean, I think I drive people out of my late night parties, because I can't stop playing music for people. I'm just like, sit down, listen,
yeah.
You know, and it's just like, listen to this. And, you know, it also just, it sounds so good in my studio. I have a really cool console that was from Nashville in the mid-70s, and just everything coming out of that, it's like, it's my system is of the era of the records that I'm listening to, so it's like a perfect, you know, kind of match, and it just sounds striking in here. So it's more entertaining than anything that you could watch,
right?
You know, in my opinion. It's just listening to good music on a good stereo system. It's like total revelation.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to be relevant with my piece that I'm going to do on Daniel, I just want to ask you some general questions about Jason Faulkner's world. And I was wondering, if do you have a solo album in the works, a new one? Have you been touring? What's going on with Jason Faulkner these days?
Oddly enough, I'm starting my solo record day after tomorrow. I'll be doing it in my studio. What's going on with me is, yeah, there's not much touring. I'm doing a couple of shows here in L.A. In October and November. And then nothing until I finish this record. So I'm going to be basically working on this record until the end of the year. And then I need to figure out how to put it out. I know that a lot of people are just self-putting things out now, but I am not nearly a disciplined enough businessman to put things out myself. So I'll be looking for some label or vehicle or whatever to get this out and into people's heads. So that's pretty much it. Starting that in a couple of days in my studio.
Cool. So in all the projects throughout the years, I've been a big fan of Jason Faulkner, from Beatnik Beach to The Grays to Jellyfish to your solo work and studio work with Beck and McCartney. What have you dug the most?
Oh, man. Without a doubt, my first solo record. That, when I look back at that point in my life, that, you know, because that was the first time I ever played every instrument, you know, which some people misunderstand as me being you know, showy or cocky or whatever. Like, look at me. It's not that at all. There's not even a hint of that with me. It's it's born out of such a deep love for rock music and all the different instruments. And I just, when I hear a song in my head and I start working it out and it turns into something that I'm writing, I'm hearing all the parts equally. I don't hear just the vocal melody or just the, whatever I'm writing it on, piano or guitar. I hear the bass line, I hear the drums, I hear, and I'm molding that as I'm writing it, as I'm recording it, and kind of trying different things, but it's always just me. So I do something, then go, no, this should be more like this, and do it again. And that's why I play all the instruments, because it's the most efficient and most honest way for me to get to my head out into the world. And instead of having to explain to a drummer that, no, you got to play more like you're like 14 years old and you don't really know how to play that well, but you're also good. You're also you, and you can play, but it has to have that energy. And trying to describe that, like, kind of, you know, ethereal things to people, it's just more time consuming, actually. It takes longer to do that than me to play everything myself. So,
sure.
I totally forgot your question.
Oh, no, that was it. I wanted to know what projects over the years, and that first album, Author Unknown, was an amazing album.
Yeah, that, I mean, it was, you know, I'm not even saying that's my favorite thing I've done, but just that period in my life, I was like probably 27, 27 when I made that, and I was just on fire. Like, I just remember making that. Like, I had the poor engineer, you know, that I just met. He had no idea what he was signing up for, and I just was like, you have to follow me with a microphone. Like, I'm just going to walk around, and I'm just going to pick stuff up, follow me with that Neumann microphone, and plop it right in front of me when I start doing something. And, you know, basically, that's how that record was made. It was just me running around like a madman and then having this poor engineer sweating, following me around with a mic. And, you know, that was a really innocent time for me, too, because I hadn't had any disappointments commercially. I mean, I didn't really care that much about the bands I was in before, because I was not really like a founding member. And I also, there was so much turmoil within the band with other people that it just kind of like pushed me away and made me kind of think, oh, well, everything's going to be fine when I finally get a solo deal. So that was the culmination of all that frustration. And, you know, and I'd signed to Elektra, and to me, Elektra at least philosophically seemed like a really cool mid-level label, not a huge conglomerate like Sony, but also not, you know, a tiny little indie. And so that was really exciting. You know, it took a while for the wind to be kicked out of my sails, you know, when the album didn't sell, but
yeah,
when I was making it, that was probably the high point of my life.
Well, so speaking of being a part of projects, what was it like to be a part of something that to this day is seen as one of the finest albums in the 90s, which are the Jellyfish albums? How was that to be in that band and to produce that kind of material?
Well, I was really a fan of the singer and the main songwriter, Andy. You know, I didn't know him until I was in the band, but I had lived with the demos for, I don't know, 5 or 6 months before I finally moved up to San Francisco and officially joined what would become Jellyfish. And, you know, so it was very bittersweet, because I don't know if you know anything about that whole history, but Andy and I just never got along. So, you know, we're making what I consider to be a very, very good record. And, you know, I'm thrilled about that, because I had just gotten out of the 3 o'clock, and the 3 o'clock record, I think, is terrible. I thought it was terrible when we were making it. You know, I was the only one who thought so, and I was also the new kid, so nobody would listen to me. So I'm in this band with, we've got the guy that produced Saturday Night Fever and Eric Clapton, and, you know, we've got a really good engineer, this incredible engineer. And I'm just like, man, this is amazing. Why can't we just get along? Like, what? Like, we're going to blow it. Like, I just knew that the attitude problems that we had with each other were going to devastate it. And so that was, you know, like, that made it really bittersweet. I mean, we were doing these crazy orchestral things, and, you know, we had a really cool philosophy when we made that record, which was, the core of the band, which was just the three of us, we were the only ones making that record, that we were always going to be represented in every song as a trio played live. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't know that, but so every song on that record has a performance of the three of us live, and that's the first performance. So that's the skeleton of the song. And so in songs like, what is it? Oh man, I can't think of the titles right now. She Still Loves Him. Okay. She Still Loves Him. You hear, it's just one guitar, and, I'm playing that guitar, and then the solo kicks in, and you hear the rhythm guitar go away because the solo is me just stepping on an AB box and switching to another amp that's just cranked up,
yeah.
And that's my solo tone. And I just thought things like that were really cool and also very, not very of the day, because, you know, in the 1989, 90, 91, man, nobody was making records like that.
No.
You know, everything was Fairlights and horrible samples, and, you know, so.
Absolutely.
It was cool.
Very cool. So,
but yeah, I mean, I was aware that we were making something that was like notches above the competition. And I think we all were, and that's one of the reasons why it's kind of so sad that we just couldn't get it together and like get along. I mean, it seems like, you know, it just seems like it should have been easier to do than it was, but it wasn't.
So there has never been any talk of you guys doing anything ever again. It was just once you guys were done, that was the end of Jellyfish.
Well, once I was done, I was like good riddance because I had an ulcer when I was 22, and I was really affected by the bad attitude that I got from Andy. I was really affected by it.
Sure.
Because I care. You know, if I didn't care, then I'd just go on to the next thing. But I really cared, and I really cared about that music. I left and then I remember their manager calling me like even like a year later going like, please, Andy just was walking around going, I just want Jason. Like he's meeting potential guitar players and he's like, well, he's not Jason. I'm like, well, that's weird. Cause like I never ever gave me any indication that he even cared about my playing. You know what I mean? So then all of a sudden he's like, but it's not Jason. I was like, that's weird. The only thing that has come up that I don't think will happen, probably because of Andy, because I would actually do something now, is there's a huge festival out here called Coachella.
Yeah.
And I think it was about a year, maybe either a year ago or 2 years ago, somebody from Coachella, one of the promoters, was found my info and asked me if the band would be interested in reforming for Coachella. And I was like, well, I think you're going to have a hard time finding Andy and convincing him to do that. But, you know, I was like, well, I might do it, you know, and then it just fell away.
Sure.
So
let me move into the Beatles segment right now of the interview. What is your favorite Beatles album?
I'm sure it's probably Revolver.
Okay. What do you have any plans on doing any more bedtime with the Beatles?
I probably not. I think two was, I mean, I only planned on doing one. And the only reason I did a second one was because my friend Dave Sardi, who's a big rock record producer guy, he had a new son, and he called me, and he's like, man, somebody gave me this Beatle thing for kids. And he was like, I put it on. I couldn't believe it. He was like, it's so good. And then I looked, and he was like, saw your name. And he's like, what happened to that? And I was like, what do you mean what happened to it? It was on Sony, and they, you know, they didn't really promote it. And it's not, I guess it's kind of hard to promote a children's album, but... you know, that's what happened to it. And he was like, shit, man, you should do another one, and you should do it in my studio. I'll give you my studio. So that's the only reason the second one came about. I probably wouldn't have done that had it not been for, you know, free studio time at his world-class studio while he's out producing Oasis in England. And so probably not again. You know, I did think about doing some other, you know, maybe an ELO one or,
cool.
You know, I don't know what else, but no, I'm kind of, see, I can never gauge if those records have actually hurt or helped my own career. I can't gauge. I have no idea, but I know that when I did the first one, I was concerned about that. I remember that because I was like, I'm not a guy that makes kids records. You know, that's not what I do. I don't even have kids. And I mean, I love kids and I plan on having kids, but that's not like what I do, and I don't want that to confuse my fans into thinking I'm like some sort of cuddly thing when that's not, that's part of what I do, but that's not like all I do.
Right.
And so I to be honest with you, I don't know if those records helped or hurt my solo records.
Sure.
The perception of me out there. Sometimes I think it hurt it, but I don't know.
Sure. Sure. I'll tell you what, Jason, I have come to the end of my questions. I will tell you personally, as a big fan of yours, I think it added to the range and breadth that you give as far as your entire music catalog is concerned. I think it helped. I love listening to them. In fact, I have my trusty studio engineer and good friend, John Christopher, here. I have a jazz show here in Kansas City that I do. It's kind of a more of an indie underground thing, and I do some pop crossovers. I'm going to have Across the Universe on the show tonight.
Sweet.
So I'm putting that on. But I did want to tell you also, back in 04, I had it was totally awesome. I loaded up in a car with one of my best friends, Dan Emig, and went down to Dallas to see you open for Travis. And it was totally cool to see you live, but to see you plug that iPod in and do what you did with that was awesome.
Cool. Thanks, man.
So at any rate, I really appreciate the time you put out, and I tell you what, as a fan of your music, I am more of a fan of you now than ever. I can hear you live your music, and you're a totally grounded, cool cat, and it's so refreshing to have people like you on this planet. I thank you, and I appreciate you giving your time up tonight to talk to me.
Well, I really appreciate that. Thanks a lot, man. Good talking to you.
Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Take care.